What's up, friends and family? Glad to be in your home with you again. We got an exciting show today. We got the one and only primary victor, champion, and soon to be congressman in District 23, Joe Kaufman's in the house, y'all. Say hi to him.
All hey, right. Everybody. Sounds like a boxing match.
Yes, yes, yes. Joe, how does it feel to get mid to this midpoint and win this primary?
And to be honest, I was relieved that I won. You know, we believed that we had the race in hand from the start, but until you actually win, then you win, you know?
Yeah.
So we were relieved that we won, and I want to thank all of the people who voted for me, who had the confidence in me to do this again. You know, yeah. This is my third time to go up against Debbie Wasserman Schultz in the general, and they tell me this is the charm, and I believe it is.
Okay, good. Man, I know that a lot of people are wondering, what is your secret sauce, man? What made you the most trustable and reliable person in the minds of Republicans?
Well, you know, I think people see me as somebody that's committed to this race. Certainly running a number of times shows that. I think people appreciate the fact that, like, during early voting, I was there for 14 days straight from morning till night out there speaking with the voters, giving out materials, saying hi, shaking hands. You know, I've been committed to this every day for a number of years now, and I think that most of the voters recognize that.
Okay. Good. Well, we got a lot to talk about today, and I'm happy that you're in the studio here to have this conversation. I know that you're busy. I know that you're working hard, and I know that all this hard work is going to pay off. You know, a lot of people are wondering, you know, how does a politician, how can someone like you who runs for office have an effect on their life? How do you improve their life? How do politicians or a congressional candidate, because we don't, in this district, we don't hear too much from Debbie, except we see her on TV. We see her on a national level. And I know a lot of people are sick and tired of senators and congressmen and women going to office and then kind of
disappearing from the community.
Yeah, trying to have a national platform when their own district is struggling. So how do you improve your district? How do you improve the average person's life in this district?
So, you know, it's true that when you go to Congress, you are voting on a number of issues, national issues that affect all Americans. However, you know, there are things that you could do at home, such as, you know, if there's a part of the community that's not doing as well as other places in the community, you know, I think you need to take that leadership upon yourself to make sure that the community rallies around that area, unifies and betters that area. Because if you have one area that's doing poorly, then I think that reflects on the entire district. So that's one thing that you could do is take leadership and try to bring the community leaders together to better the district. But you could also see in the district, you know, I use as an example, those shopping centers that you go to that still have for rent signs on their windows, because we know that unemployment is low. We know the rate of growth in the country is doing pretty good right now.
Okay.
You know, the economy is doing well, but we do see those for rent signs. And as a congressman, how you can affect your area, certainly you can push for tax breaks for small businesses in shopping centers to create businesses, to maintain their businesses. You know, if a leader of the community, if someone who is in U.S. Congress can see in front of his face that there's still work to be done. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, there is great growth and unemployment is low, but there's still work to be done. Then you can mold bills to address that for the community.
Okay.
School safety, you know, it's an issue. I know we want to talk about it, but you know, it's something that my wife and I, we care about. We have a 5-year-old daughter. We care about, you know, the safety from her school. One thing that reassures us that she is safe is the fact that there's an armed guard at the entrance, an armed guard at the exit, someone else who's roaming, another guard who roams the perimeter. You know, those are things that are necessary for not just our daughter's school, but for all schools to have proper fencing, you know, to have metal detectors. That's common sense. We don't want our children thinking that they're going to school in a prison, but we also want to take those common sense measures that allow them to be safe.
Okay. Well, in fact, I have this video I want to show you about the Parkland shooting, and I thought it was pretty alarming, you know, just to see how people are thinking about how to defend and how to help kids. And let me go ahead and just show this to you. So I'll stop there. So what do you think about that? What do you think about the fact that, you know, the Broward County district basically was against? I mean, not everyone. It was, of course, the elites that basically were against putting metal detectors. And I just don't understand, me personally, why they would be against that, because if if they were a high, you know, legislative representative, their kids would be in highly secured schools. President Obama had his children in highly secured schools. What's your thoughts on that? I mean, do you think that's right or wrong?
No, I mean, I'm sure that those legislators or those officials, they have children themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure about all of them, but I'm sure that some of them do, for a fact. And being that they have children, just like you and I, you know, I would think that they would want their children to have the utmost in safety in their schools.
Okay.
Again, you know, I don't want to see kids that think that they're going to jail, but you definitely have to do those things in the very least that assure their safety, and one of those things that that I believe you must do is metal detectors. And I could understand if they're talking about a question of financing for it, except for the fact that definitely in the state of Florida, you know, we have a lottery that's supposed to provide money for education. We like the rest of the country, give a lot of our tax dollars towards schools. I could also understand the argument that a lot of our tax dollars, it goes towards the federal government, towards a Department of Education that many times, at least in the past, devoured, you know, money before it got to the locales, to the local communities. Certainly money should be focused on those that need it, on the students and teachers, and also on safety, so that everybody is safe. So I certainly believe that education, at least funding for education, should become more localized.
Okay.
I believe that power for the power over the education system should be more localized, should be given to the states and the local communities.
Yeah.
And there would be more money maybe for things like this. But again, I believe the money is there.
Mm-hmm.
And if the money is there, then we have no excuse but to do the right thing and put the right measures in place that would allow our kids to be safe.
Well, that takes me to the next topic. I know that that Tim Canova, for example, has been endorsed by Bernie Sanders, and I know he's kind of in the same school of thought as the gentleman Gilliam, who's running for the governorship. And these guys basically believe that all of the funding should just go to public schools, and there shouldn't be charters, there shouldn't be vouchers. You know, schools that basically are competing to have better security, to have better parental relationships, to provide more opportunities. I'm thinking like schools like American Heritage, for example, private schools that if a lot of kids had vouchers or had funding that their taxes are paying for, you know, not only could they go to schools like this, but maybe more schools like that would pop up because the funding would be there. And so now it'd create competition. You know, and I know a lot of Caribbean parents who are Democrats and independents who are for school choice, and it's been proven in the state of Florida. So what's your position on that? Are you someone that also believes that it should only be public schools and charter schools, and the voucher possibility is taking away from our kids, or where do you stand on these issues?
First of all, there's a lot of kids going to school.
Okay.
And so when you have more facilities for those children, you know, it's been proven that less kids per class, obviously they get more attention than if you fill up the classes with more children. That's one issue. Second issue is that failing schools, you know, there are a lot of schools in Florida and elsewhere who are not doing as well as others.
Okay.
So if a parent has a choice of where to send their children, and certainly, you know, a lot of these private schools are expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no doubt. Like my wife and I, use us as an example. We want our daughter to have a religious Jewish education.
Okay.
In fact, for us, it's not so much a choice. For us, it's mandatory that this takes place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, certainly nobody's holding a gun to our head to do this.
Yeah.
Sorry for the, but
bad analogy,
bad analogy, maybe, but we, for us, it's necessary to do this. And we also know that we pay a lot of our tax dollars towards the public schools, and maybe some of those tax dollars should come back to us for a private school education in the form of vouchers. But as you know, Jack, you know, there's one thing in our campaign that we are pushing, and I look forward to doing it as a United States congressman, and that is to have vouchers not just to come from the government, because I understand people are concerned that government pays for so much so much now, mm-hmm. And they don't want to see our debt and our deficit go up. But you know, it's a big staple of our campaign. It certainly will be a staple of my office as congressman that we get industry involved in this, that we have industry finance vouchers, and that we have industry partner with schools, with government to create. Not only to finance vouchers, but to put vocational training in our schools. That's where the industries would benefit, because here you would have classes who would develop skills for our youth to move into those industries once they graduate. You know, it's a big problem for our nation that a lot of kids are graduating without the proper skills in order to get a job. Even those who are going on to college and university, they're not getting those proper skills.
I know that Trump wants to extend the GI Bill and also the ability for soldiers to be able to get education post-military. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a good thing because mm-hmm. a lot of our soldiers, you know, they have issues coming home.
Yeah.
You know, can't find a job. A lot of them, and because they can't find jobs, many of them are in a very bad situation, a disastrous situation. I know, you know, I've met a lot of homeless vets in the past who certainly want a better situation than they have now, but they've been thrown into a situation where they come back from fighting and it's a difficult process for them. But it's not just for them though that we need to rally around. We also need to rally around those, you know, who don't have the proper skills to get jobs.
Okay.
You know, what we don't want to have happen is for people to sit home and collect welfare checks. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the worst thing that could happen for our country. And unfortunately, you know, in all the years that President Obama was in office, it was growing and growing and growing. You know, we've lost that work ethic. We've lost that pride in making our own money. And that's something
I think we got a caller.
Okay, sure.
Sorry about that. Go ahead.
And it's something that I believe vocational training in schools provides, and financing job training for those who don't have the skills to work. Because if the government gets behind financing job training for vets and otherwise and others, that makes money for the country.
Yes.
Certainly, there's some money that you dole out for that, but ultimately, you have people working, you have more money in the marketplace, and you have better and you have more healthy workers that way.
Absolutely. And if you're watching this program today, you can call in at 954-994-1129 at extension 20. Again, that's 954-994-1129 at extension 20. If you have a question for Joe, we'll be able to pick up the line for you.
And also, speaking more on top of this work ethic, so, you know, our nation in the past, vocational training in our schools, it was a norm for the United States.
Okay.
You know, there was vocational training throughout the U.S. and throughout schools. You didn't have to go to a vocational school in order to have vocational training.
Mm-hmm.
But I take it from experience. When I grew up in Yonkers, New York, we had vocational training throughout all of our schools. And in the school that I went to, Roosevelt, we had media training, and Gordon had computer science, and Saunders had engineering, and another one had car shop, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we were able to graduate, those who graduated from the Yonkers high schools, and New York is pretty good about, you know, vocational training in their schools. But anyone that graduated from a high school in Yonkers, at least when I was of high school age, you know, they were getting the proper training in order to move into a job. You know, if they didn't have money for college or university, you know, I was blessed that my grandparents who raised me had enough finances to send me off to a university. But okay. a lot of kids don't have that opportunity. And even when they do, many times they opt not to go to college or university. But at least we have something to fall back on,
sure.
or something to take the reins of, and to put kids right, to put our youth right to work right away.
Now, what do you say to the critics who basically believe that it's not the government's job to educate, and that you know, we know that someone like Tim Canova is a socialist, and he believes that government should take care of basically everything. From cradle to grave, you know, what do you believe is the role of government, especially when it comes to, you know, social services and, you know, Medicare and military and, you know, just all these aspects? Are you kind of a socialist leaning person? Are you pure capitalist? Where do you lean?
Well, certainly with regards to our nation's defense, mm-hmm. the nation has to finance that. And I don't think anybody would question that, you know, Republican, Democrat, or anything in between. That's not a – we certainly don't want private industry taking over our military. I guess some would debate that it already has, you know, the military complex of, you know, from our wars. But certainly it has to be financed by the U.S. government. But there are things. Look, we have to think of this in common sense. You know, I'm not against public schools. I you know, but I do believe there should be competition.
Yeah.
You know, I think if you have charter schools, if you have private schools, that provides competition for public schools. And competition, in my eyes, is good. If there's a charter school that does poorly, then it will fall by the wayside. But if it thrives, then the children thrive under it. So I think competition is good. With regards to things like Social Security, Medicare, you know, I don't look at those things as entitlements. For me, you know, I was raised by my grandparents. I took care of my grandmother for a number of years. It's why I live in Florida to begin with. And I stayed here, thank God, because it's nice in Florida. but I know how important Social Security and Medicare was to my grandmother, and I also know that we as working citizens, we pay into that, and our seniors, you know, if my grandparents, they always taught me to honor contracts, and for me, Social Security, it's a contract that America has with its nation's seniors. And so, you know, I believe that they're owed that money because they worked hard for that money.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. Good. And you know, for the individuals who basically are really undecided in District 23, they may be independent, they may be libertarian, they may be, you know, just a real critical liberal or Democrat, or even more of a liberal leaning Republican. How do you cater? I mean, not cater, but are you the candidate for these people, or are you? Because some people have accused you of being a zealot because of your terrorism work. Some have even said you're anti-Muslim. How do you explain, who are you in light of the moderate, the individual that works hard, cares about this country, but really wants to avoid all extremes to the right and the left?
Well, certainly I'm proud of my work in the counterterrorism field. I believe, and many believe, that my work protected my nation. You know, after 9/11, a lot of people joined up with the military. You know, I was a little older, and I felt my calling was to definitely serve my nation, but to do so with research and writing and lectures, which is what I do today for a number of think tanks. I've done work with a number of government agencies in order to shut down terrorist charities, in order to imprison terror-related individuals. Again, I'm very proud of my work in protecting my nation. No one should feel that I'm against Muslims or anyone else because I'm trying to protect my nation from those who wish to do us harm. But for the general voter to understand, yes, it's true that I'm conservative. I'm a Republican, and my votes will reflect that in Congress. But it's also true that the person that you vote for that represents the community, mm-hmm. who represents the community, that's the individual that's going to handle your personal, issues.
Yeah.
Those who are voting in District 23 should know that, unlike Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who has been in there for well over a decade already, I'm going to have an open door policy in my office that any Democrat or Republican or anyone in between will be able to come through and voice their concerns and know that our office is going to handle their concerns in the best way possible and not overlook them and not ignore them as Debbie has done to so many people. I hear over and over again how people have called Debbie's office and they never receive a response from her office, from her or anyone working there. And that has to stop. So regardless of our politics, whether Debbie's a Democrat or I'm a Republican or anything like that, know that I'm going to represent everyone in the community equally.
And it's interesting because I know that sometimes conservatives are accused of not being conservationists. People who care about creation and nature and the climate. But you took an interesting position in the past. Especially when it comes to the Everglades and big sugar companies, in saying, look, we need to do something about this algae issue. And in fact, I got a video here. I'm just going to show a little bit of it. Let me see here. Okay. All right. So let me stop that. All kinds of stuff going on here. All right, that was you taking a position on the Everglades in 2016. Has your position changed?
No.
Are you what causes you to care about the Everglades? And I mean, that's not necessarily a position that conservatives sometimes, or people think of as conservatives. They think conservatives only care about business,
sure,
and the bottom line.
The perception is out there that Republicans or conservatives do not care for the environment. But I'm here to say that it's completely the opposite. Caring for the environment, you don't have to be a liberal to care for the environment.
Absolutely.
If you see this toxic algae is having a harmful effect, not just on the Everglades or Okeechobee or many, many parts of Florida, then you have to understand that it's doing grave harm to Florida itself, doing harm to our industries. If I'm talking to conservatives right now who care about the bottom line, it's doing harm to our tourist industry. It's doing harm to our real estate. People refusing to purchase houses that are near waterways who have been infected with this toxic algae. I would say to the sugar industry that they should that they should be concerned as well, because without the state of Florida, there is no sugar industry. You know, I don't want to destroy the sugar industry. I know the sugar industry is an important industry for the state of Florida. But if there is no Florida, then there is no sugar industry. Hmm. So for me, Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
So you kind of have a balanced approach.
I have a balanced approach, absolutely. I signed this Now or Neverglades Declaration, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz refused to. And it's because she's getting a lot of money from the sugar industry that she, you know, she's doing their bidding. I want the voters to know that that I'm doing the bidding of the Floridians, of the voters themselves, and not some for, some big time lobbyists out there. You know, we don't finance, you know, big consultants with our campaign, and I don't have my strings being pulled by anyone.
Okay. And I know that Debbie, because I know that there's a lot of Jewish people in our district, right?
Sure.
And, you know, most of them tend to lean left. But I know that since 2016, there's even before 2016, there was a sense of betrayal amongst the Jewish community, as I've talked to Jews, concerning Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the position she took on Iran and just different things that she did. In fact, we have a clip here that you did in 2016 that I thought was pretty telling, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on it after we show this clip here.
Sure.
All right, so that was man, really good video. I was really shocked when I first saw it to see. Man, just how much she has betrayed her people. I know if Obama did that to the African American community, or Rubio did that to the Cuban community, they would be pretty upset. You know what? So how are you comparing and contrasting yourself to her in relationship to the Jewish people and their safety, not only here but all around the world, and the role that U.S. has played in being good to our key ally, the only democracy in the Middle East. What's your thoughts?
Sure. Well, first of all, I want to say that Jews in the community, they make up a big part of the district. And when I say I want to represent everyone, you know, I want to represent the Jews. You know, that includes the Jewish population in the district. And one of the issues that the Jewish population, I know personally, I'm Jewish and something I care about, and I know a number of Jews, certainly a number of pro-Israel Christians as well, care about is the protection of Israel. Israel certainly is a buffer zone for the United States, a front line in against terrorism overseas. We have a great friendship with Israel. Certainly, Israel is a democracy, and Israel is run very close to, as you know, their government is run very similar to how the United States government is run, except with a number of more of political parties.
Yeah,
or at least political parties who are. You know, legitimate over there. You know, over here we have a lot of political parties also, but there's only two that take up most of the votes. But it's for me, it's important not just as a Jew, but as also as an American, but also as, again, a legislator who's representing the community to support Israel. Mm-hmm. And when you have a legislator that is going against America's friend as much as Debbie Wasserman Schultz has, you know, then the voter should be concerned. Everybody should be concerned, but certainly those who are Jewish, who care about Israel, who are Christian, who care about Israel, and others, everyone who cares about Israel needs to be concerned with Debbie Wasserman Schultz's actions.
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, this is interesting. Expose they did on Debbie. In fact, here, let me go ahead and just show this, and I'd like to hear your comments on it. This is the Anwan situation. So she continues to put pressure on him.
And you missed the part where she actually threatens him.
Yeah, just because of time, I had to cut it short. Sure. But what is your thoughts on Debbie? You talked a little bit about her betrayal of the Jewish people, but is she crooked? Is she, people call her Dirty Debbie. Does she have dirty politics, or are you just doing that to get votes and to create drama?
You just witnessed, as those who are listening to this and viewing this did, of a politician who was abusing her position as a congresswoman, as a United States congresswoman, mm-hmm. putting pressure on the chief of police of the Capitol Police, and over an issue. Any equipment that they find from a representative's office, that's lost should certainly be returned to that representative. But what we're talking about here is a case where that equipment may have been used in a crime of money laundering and maybe otherwise that was used. And it just happened to be from her office. And why was it from her office? Because she hired this individual to work for her, this Pakistani IT specialist, Alwan. She hired him. She brought him and his brothers into the Democratic Party. At the time, she was the head of the DNC. These three brothers worked for a number of high-profile U.S. representatives, and she was the one that brought them in. It's my understanding as well that she stopped background checks from happening on these individuals. And so, if any crime took place, she in the very least should have been held a little bit responsible for allowing this individual to work in her office, to use the computers that evidently were used for this crime.
Okay.
She should have been held responsible.
And it does seem that that Democrats and liberals and independents kind of understood that she's corrupt, because we know that Donna Brazile. Mm-hmm. She basically said that Debbie is rigged, the primary against Bernie Sanders, and I know that a lot of people were not happy about that. In fact, I got this clip here. I want to hear your comments on this. This is all right. So, the reality is that people, including Democrats, don't like Debbie because. I mean, I know the Bernie people don't, because she crowned Hillary Clinton and did not have an honest primary. What's your thoughts on this crowd's reaction and the kind of sentiment that you're feeling towards Debbie as you're out there campaigning?
Well, look, you see that her own party is booing her. Mm-hmm. They want her to get off the stage. At the time, she was the head of the DNC, and it was shortly after that she the next day that she had to resign from her position as the head of the DNC. The Democratic Party's conflict with the socialists versus the establishment today can definitely be traced in good part to Debbie Wasserman Schultz's actions at the DNC, where she used her position, again, abused her position in the Democratic Party, this time not as a representative, but as the head of the DNC, to try to get one person, one Democrat, elected above another. And that would be trying to get her friend Hillary Clinton elected over Bernie Sanders. Hmm. So tried to destroy Bernie Sanders, and these emails prove that in order to help Hillary Clinton, who she knew was with her. So she stood to gain from this. I am sure she wouldn't have done anything if she didn't stand to to gain from it, but she stood to gain from Hillary Clinton winning the primary. And it showed, because right after she had to resign from the DNC at that point, what you just showed, Hillary Clinton named Debbie Wasserman Schultz as the head of her her campaign for all 50 states.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny that a lot of people, some people have accused you of, you know, being really like a religious Jew that's very like uptight and legalistic. But what blew me away about you is that you took an early position on medical marijuana, even when Debbie didn't, and even a lot of conservatives and Republicans hadn't. But now, of course, there's a change of heart. People are realizing that it could, you know, marijuana is a strong medicinal property that can help a lot of people that are dying and suffering. And here's I'm just going to show like 30 seconds of this clip you did in 2016,
sure,
which I was pretty blown away. Just how balanced your views were, and I can't find too many Republicans or conservatives who would or are against medical marijuana, as they wouldn't be against morphine or some type of painkiller, but yet the side effects of medical marijuana are not as drastic, and I'd like to hear more of your thoughts.
But I just want to say before you do that, I want to assure the voters out there who are under this, you know, fantasy that I'm only for Jews or for Israel.
Yeah.
You know, it's an issue. It's an issue, and I take a stance on Israel. I'm a supporter of Israel.
Okay.
But I'm definitely Jewish. I am religious. My family, my family is as well. But I definitely don't take, you know, away from anybody else who is religious, whether they're Christian or Muslim or otherwise. You know, people should respect the fact that I'm religious and believe in God and run my life that way.
Okay, we're playing this video here, the medical marijuana one. All right, so I mean, this situation, of course, touches home for you, and I know that everyone kind of considers you everyone's grandson. How is this your mother's struggles influenced your concern for seniors, seniors from all political backgrounds, cultures, and races? What are some specific things apart from like medical marijuana and just having a lot of compassion, right? I see you as a compassionate conservative. What are some other specific policies and things that you really want to push through when you get to Congress?
Sure, and I just want to make mention first that with regards to this issue, medical marijuana it doesn't just alleviate the symptoms of multiple sclerosis. Studies have shown that it alleviates the symptoms of many serious diseases. Yeah. And people should know my mother is in pain every day of her life.
Wow.
So to allow her to use something that is mild, such as marijuana, is a big deal because of the fact that we know, my family knows, I know, of how the drug that my mom does use, oxycodone, how it affected our family dramatically. It led to the death of my little cousin. So it is a big deal for me personally, but it's also something that I recognize for the community. So certainly seniors should know that when they do have ailments, not being able to purchase drugs because drugs are too expensive. You know, I'm glad that President Trump has discussed that issue about bringing down the price of drugs or definitely their ailments and how to pay for them or protecting Social Security and Medicare. Seniors should know that I'm going to be their best friend in Congress.
Okay.
That my grandparents raised me. I came to Florida to take care of my grandmother. She was in and out of the hospital, in and out of rehab after the hospital, and for all the problems that she was suffering from, and know that experience these experiences, they've had a dramatic they've held a dramatic place in my life, and I know how much people suffer, and seniors should know that I'm going to be there for them. Just like you know, E. Clay Shaw, when he was a congressman, a Republican, by the way, who seniors all knew, Democrats and Republicans alike, knew that he was there to protect them, to protect their Social Security, their Medicare, and to protect them personally.
All right. So as we wrap this up, give me two things that people can do to help you win.
Well, sure. Number one, you can donate to the campaign. You know, that's an easy thing. Go to our website, joekaufman.rocks. You can mail us a donation, or you can donate right online. But what's very big for our campaign is because, you know, we've had this campaign on the ground for a while. You know, we believe in interaction with the voters, and if you want to get involved as a volunteer, if you want to make the phone calls, if you want to go help us door to door, if you want to help us stuff envelopes, please contact our campaign. It's 954-641-3449. That's 954-641-3449. Or go to our website. Again, it's joekaufman.rocks. Thank you so much.
All right, people. We appreciate you being on this broadcast with us. And, man, we appreciate Joe. And, again, we just want to continue to pray for him. If you're a person of faith, if you're not a person of faith, cheer for him. Doesn't matter. God loves us all, and his tent has space for all of us to get involved. And as a human being, over human rights issues, family issues, economic issues, and as we have Joe back again in a few days, I'm excited to hear his jobs plan, because he has some really, really great ideas that he wants to begin to implement that can really transform our district, so that we can have some living wage jobs, not by the hand of the government, but in partnership with the free markets, okay? Free enterprise, businesses, business people like you, move this world and move this nation. So I'm excited about his ideas, his energy, and his faith in the free markets, free religion, free speech, the right to bear guns, and we're going to talk more about that. But also, again, we just encourage you to check out his website and to stand with Joe. All right? Peace.
Thank you.